Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
And that was our little chime to say we're happy to have you here. No. it's just my computer talking. I'm such a great editor with this stuff. So today we are going to be talking about 7 weight loss hacks. And so we're going to give you some just ideas, some simple ideas and that we kind of utilize to help keep us on track and help keep our body composition optimal. So Chris, Do you want to start with the first hack?
Yes, I would love to. So I think the first thing to address is perspective when it comes down to eating maybe a little bit differently or making some adjustments with your nutrition. So thinking about what you can have versus what you are limited from and really weighing out the positives of each thing. So like you may be able to add more volume by eating more like vegetables, potatoes over pasta. Certain food choices can actually give you more volume for the same calorie content. And so thinking about how you can add volume to your nutrition and your meals, I think is really great. Plus also thinking about the benefits that those foods are giving you. So, you know, you're getting lots of good vitamins and minerals to help you feel energetic and, have all your body processes work optimally. So, I think just looking at it as like what you are adding to your nutrition plan now versus what you are limited to or what you're taking away.
Yeah. And I think that we can come up with several different hacks when we talk about zoodles versus pasta, or you talk about cauliflower rice versus regular rice. There's obviously different ways that you can add and get more of things. I know a lot of people even add stuff to their oatmeal just to make it more voluminous. But it's kind of just thinking about things in that abundance mindset that can also be helpful. And I know for me, just an example of kind of the, you know, thinking about it from that mentality is, if you can really fill like a big plate, I just feel like the visualization of, I don't know, it must be something mentally that if it's small and it's on like a small plate, I just feel like I'm not getting as much. I don't know. I need to see visually that I'm getting like a bunch of food, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It helps me mentally.
It makes a lot of sense. And I think like utilizing leafy greens is a great way to add volume to your food. I've like been able to throw all types of, you know, like proteins on there. I'll even put some cooked vegetables on top of lettuce just to give more volume. And then it also kind of like helps stretch your carbohydrates too. Like if I have roasted sweet potatoes and I have like, you know, 75 grams of those, I can throw them on top of a bed of greens with the rest of my meal. And like you said, Amy, it really fills up your plate, makes you feel like you're having a big meal. And there's something very satisfying about that.
Yeah. And I actually have like several dishes and I separate my food too, if just to feel like I'm eating like lots of different courses.
So yeah, I like
I'll
that.
Do like oatmeal in a bowl and then sweet potatoes on a plate and then my meat and vegetables on a large plate. And then I'll have my like little dessert peanut butter in its own separate cup. And so I feel like I'm having
that.
Almost like several 5 course meal, even though it's, you know, comparable in calories. You could just pile it all on one plate and again, not get that feeling of, oh, I have like, you know, a lot to eat here. So
I like that too. And I also think another thing that might be helpful for people is thinking about taking more bites of your food. So we're talking about like more volume, but also thinking about, you know, not consuming your meal in like 3-4 bites and then it's done. So that's another thing about like adding more like spoonfuls, and that is like taking a smaller bite, or you can get baby spoons like me or ridiculously small baby spoons. But that just kind of helps you like slow down, take more bites, and then also like prolong the eating experience, which I think is super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So know your snack times is our next hack. And it's just everybody has a certain time where they tend to snack more than usual. So it can be like knowing where those vulnerable spots are, identifying them, and then that can help you determine the actionable strategies that you can utilize to deal with them. So some people will snack mindlessly while they're watching TV at night. So, you know, personally for me, when I'm trying to really stay on top of things and not trying to get into those habits, I have my treadmill set up by my only TV in the house. So I'll just walk and it really keeps my mind off of it. And then I'm occupied by watching the TV, but I'm not sitting on the couch, you know, trying to eat some things that probably would get me into trouble. So,
yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think definitely like planning out your, like if you're counting macros, like planning out your meals and knowing what you have coming up, can always help with like the, okay, so I have, you know, so many hours and then I'll be able to eat such and such again. Making your foods like very appetizing can help with that like regular feeling like, okay, you are going to eat again at like such and such time, so I don't need to worry about snacking right now. At least that helps me, like knowing that there's a plan for the day and that's what I'm executing.
Yeah, and I try to pack a large number of quote-unquote courses in my last meal of the day, because that's when I kind of end my fasting window around 4 p.m. And so I want to feel super full after my fifth meal. So I put the most amount of volume there because it also helps me. It prevents me from my snack time, which is, you know, usually that's triggered at night because I'm more tired. Mm-hmm. I've made a lot of decisions throughout the day. And that's the time when I feel like, you know, stress can sometimes get the best of me and I can start digging for things in the pantry. But do you have kind of like a red zone like that or something that you structure your, you've kind of identified as your trigger time or situation?
Yeah, I'm similar in that like the end of the day is where I want to feel the satisfaction of feeling full. And so a lot of times I will utilize like leafy greens or make sure I just have extra vegetables so that I can fill up on that fiber. And then a lot of times I'll also before bed incorporate like a casein shake. That for some reason definitely helps fill me up when it's going to bed and kind of like satisfies the sweet tooth. And so then I don't feel like I have to snack the rest of the night. I don't like going to bed feeling really full, but I also want to feel satisfied by my meals. So that tends to work really well for me in the evenings.
Yeah, and then you're not having a carb that elevates like your body temperature. You're just having a slow digesting protein. That makes
sense. Exactly. Yeah.
So why don't you go into number three?
Yes. So number three is leaning into convenience. So definitely making sure, like we talked about, having a regular routine and schedule is super helpful. But also just removing any type of like decision-making that could be off course for your intended goals. So the biggest thing I think here is planning or bringing your meals with you. I find so many people, you know, they plan on, I'm going to go here, I'm going to eat this meal. And then, you know, they end up being stuck in traffic or they had to run a couple errands or they got called out to work longer than they thought they would. I say always bring your meals and bring them with you. There's so many nice cooler bags out there too. It's something you can just keep in your car. And if you need to eat that because you get stuck out, you'll have it available to you and you won't be scrambling for food or trying to eat out. And if you don't need it and you can go home and throw it on a plate and heat it up, then that's even better. But I always think it's better to err on the side of preparation.
Yeah. And so an example of leaning into inconvenience is just, to me, when I think about that, I think about putting layers that you have to kind of get through to get to that item. So, you know, mm-hmm. if I'm having this example that kind of like a Gen Pop example would be that somebody, you know, has a vending machine at work and it's kind of mm-hmm. like their habit when they're bored to go and get a food out of the vending machine. And so they put in that layer of, okay, I'm not going to bring cash because that's the only way that I can spend in this vending machine. And so it makes it extra hard for them to do that. I know that there's certain trigger foods for me that I will keep out of the house just so it's an extra layer. I would have to go to the store, buy that individual item to be able to eat it. When it's in my house, then, you know, it's a little bit more convenient. So just thinking about putting some layers, some barriers, even just there's been studies that show that even having it out of sight. So for example, if you had a jar of cookies in the middle of your counter and you had to walk past it and you walk through your kitchen several times a day, even though you don't realize it subconsciously, you are saying no to those cookies every time you walk past them. So just eliminating them out of your vision sight, it allows you to not have to keep wearing down your willpower muscle and saying no to that every time you walk past it. So dishes of candy and things like that, like those are really convenient ways to slip up on a diet, things that are sitting out. So just putting in those layers and making it inconvenient to be able to have access to that item is just a little bit better. I mean, even I know where my husband hides the peanut butter, but it's just the fact of it, like, not staring me in the face. I'll have a tendency to always shut pantry doors and things like that because it bugs me. I have to walk past it. You know, I work from home, and when I'm having to look at it, it bugs me a lot more, and it makes me feel like, okay, like I'm having to use willpower to say no to that, if that makes sense. But
that's actually a really good point. Yeah, and I actually really like the point that you brought up about how you work at home, because I think right now with, you know, like a lot of work is being done from home now. You know, you're working in your environment that's been known to be your relaxation. Like the end of the day, you come home, that's where you go to unwind. And so, you know, where those familiar triggers can be, you know, waiting for you after work, now they can be present while you're at home as well too. So I think that's really interesting that you mentioned, you know, making sure that your pantry doors are shut so that, you know, you're at work, you're focusing on work, and you're not having to exercise that willpower repeatedly, because it does, it wears you down.
Yeah, absolutely. So number four, do you want me to take that one, or do you want to do that one?
I'll do it. Okay. So number four is measuring and logging everything. So as competitors, you know, we're very familiar with what it is to track our macros, or calories, or follow, you know, a specific meal plan, something that's tracking your nutrition intake. But sometimes we can get a little bit lazy when it comes to like not putting everything on the food scale or just eyeballing things. And so I think really, especially if you're new to the whole tracking thing, utilizing specific measurement tools like a food scale, I think is the best option to kind of get an idea of volume, because some things stretch so far, especially like your fats. So, you know, having an extra half a tablespoon of peanut butter is, you know, an extra 50 calories, and that looks like nothing. So really making sure that you are paying attention to volume, or not volume, but like basically keeping track of what you are ingesting, so your calorie input for the day. Would you add anything to that, Amy?
Yeah, I always measure, so protein powder scoops, I feel like they can be like leveled off. They can be totally different. And so I always measure them in grams. I feel like that's one that can be easily, just like the peanut butter that you were mentioning, if you're using a tablespoon to measure your peanut butter, it's very likely that it's going to be a lot more than what you actually, than a tablespoon if you're not measuring it in grams. And I know I've given the example in past podcasts of even measuring like different types of like breads and like protein cookies and things like that. It's amazing how a label will say that, you know, a standard cookie is like 60 grams and then you put it on the scale, it's like 80 or, you know, I'm like, okay, how is that possible? Because probably that batch had like a couple more of those like chunks of, you know, chocolate chip chunks or something like that. Silly examples, but I mean, even just like oatmeal, you know, when you're measuring it with a cup, it's so much different than measuring it in grams because those flakes are just really easy. And it's just same with like vegetables. You can pack them in there into the cup versus measuring them out. So just those little things can make a big difference. I know it sounds nitpicky, but we are in a sport that is pretty extreme. And so any type of little deviations like that can actually really add up pretty fast, especially if you're on a pretty low budget and a big deficit.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also think like another thing with the food scale is water content. So, you know, if you are measuring your proteins cooked versus raw, and you're utilizing a, you know, calorie tracker, making sure you're differentiating between those two can make a big difference as well. And I know people love their air fryers. I definitely love my air fryer, but just be cautious as well too, because that's pulling out a lot of water content, which is going to weigh a lot on the scale. So just making sure cognizant of, you know, how you're measuring things. But I do agree. I like using the food scale, especially when it comes to nutrition labels, like that protein powder is a big one. Those sometimes are just like general scoops in there, and it does make a big difference.
Yeah, you make a good point with sweet potatoes. So I would always measure the sweet potatoes raw before you cook them. Because if you're making sweet potato chips, especially, so much of the water comes out of those and they become extremely calorically dense because they're dehydrated. It's kind of like dehydrated fruit as well, you know. It really condenses it down into a very calorically dense product by pulling that out.
Correct.
So, yeah, and it's all about volume when it comes to this type of situation as well. So that's key. All right, hack number five is replace problem foods. So, I mean, this is kind of like a Gen Pop kind of list. So, you know, it's just saying to, like, instead of having bags of chips, get, like, the mini portion ones and things like that. But when I think of a competitor, I think of a jar of, like, Costco cashews and versus doing, like, the individual 100-calorie packs of cashews. Just for a portion control situation, I think that that's more applicable to a competitor, where we talk about, you know, kind of making sure that we're keeping things under control so that there's not like a temptation to pull more out of it. That's why I freeze my peanut butter. It's why I make protein ice cream, because if I eat it fast, I'll get a brain freeze. Just things to kind of, you know, make things a little bit, you know, to save calories essentially by making your portions, you know, on task, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you?
And I know.
Help me out here on this one. I feel like I'm not getting my point across very well.
It's a pretty simple point of like what you, like you were saying about the cookie jar. Is what you put in front of you, you have to say no to over and over again. I know for me, I don't have kids, so I can pretty much purchase the foods that I want to consume. And I make sure that, even if there's something on sale that I really like that I get to utilize like in my improvement season, I don't buy it in bulk, because whatever I buy in bulk, I'll just eat in bulk. So I think it's a matter of like making smart shopping choices as well too. And I think the other thing is like, okay, you know, if your family likes to eat like Goldfish and chocolate chip cookies and stuff like that, you know, putting that in a separate pantry or a place for them would be my recommendation, just so you're not like constantly having to look at, like Amy said, about closing the pantry doors. So I don't know. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. If you do have the luxury of removing foods that are triggers for you, absolutely do that. If they need to be in the house for another individual that resides there, just kind of put them out of sight so that you're not tempted in that regard.
Yeah, that's a good point. We have two separate pantries. So yeah, there's
there you go.
Pantry. And then there's, yeah, the adult one. All right, number six of our weight loss hacks. You take that one.
Yeah, so have non-scale goals. So I think this is really important. I know a lot of people get very focused on what the scale is saying to them, especially as competitors. And, you know, we set goals of, you know, we want to see a decrease so many, you know, like 1 pound a week. And it can be super frustrating when that is not consistent. And rarely ever do I see it every single week. So I think sometimes I have to reiterate to competitors, you know, focus on the things that you're executing as accomplishments rather than just having the scale be your only feedback. So, you know, obviously we use measurements, but also focus on the things that you can control directly. So I really like that, Amy, you started incorporating a step goal. I believe we started that last year, or a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. But like, that's something very tangible that people can, you know, like execute and focus on, you know, getting all your workouts in and tracking your food. I have some clients that actually make a calendar and they will check off like the, you know, maybe three goals that they want to make sure they execute 100%. And that gives them a sense of satisfaction, look at the end of the week and say, wow, like I really, you know, did well with these things. And, you know, I need to step it up on a couple things that they may be struggling with. And I know for me, I've given myself an actual grade, and I've said this on the podcast before, when I was having trouble with just feeling like I was succeeding, is, you know, my coach gave me a plan and did I execute it 100%? And if I did, I gave myself a 100 on that day. And if I didn't, then I gave myself a lower score, and it drove me crazy to see anything less than a 100. And so, but it still helped me feel like I was doing what I was supposed to and I was making changes. And it was, you know, it's my coach's responsibility at that point to kind of evaluate and let me know what things we need to change. So what did you want to add to that? Sorry, I got a little bit on a rant.
No, that was good. I liked your rant. Yeah. So every week I have this app that has my habit tracker. So one of my habits that I have to say yes, no, or skipped is stick to nutrient-dense foods 90% of your eating day. Habit number two is drink a minimum of 1 gallon of water per day. Aim for 12,000 to 15,000 steps daily. Eat protein at each meal. Foam, roll, and stretch daily. Ab vacuums daily. And practice posing daily. So I have to admit that the last one is the one that I struggle with the most.
Oh, that's tough. But
it's good for me to be aware, you know, these are tangible items that I can know that I've achieved. And then I always do my mini goals. So, you know, this week I pulled out all processed foods. So I don't know if I'm having like, it's like when a wife is pregnant and their husband's like getting sympathy pains or like whatever, but all of my competitors were, you know, I changed over all of their foods to whole foods because the thermic effect of food is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Whole foods are not only going to make you more satiated, they're going to make you feel more full. They're going to give you more micronutrients, but they're not going to process through your body as fast. And so yes. it's going to allow your body to work harder and actually burn more calories with just digestion. Mm-hmm. So I'm buckling up with them and doing that challenge this week. So I've eliminated my protein shake this week. And I've actually felt way better. I feel way more full. My cravings are down because, you know, that protein shake not only had dairy, so I've noticed that I have more energy, but I'm not craving and I'm not like ravenously hungry waiting for my next meal. I feel pretty full and satisfied all day. So I guess it works. Take my
Great.
So
Yeah. I think it's important for people to hear. Sometimes it could be hard to make those like sacrifices, especially when you're getting down to like a couple, you know, foods that your body digests well in a show day. But I've seen that too, that it really works. And it's helped with appetite and people looking their best too. So competitors are tough. I just got to give them a lot of credit for making those adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. It's tough, but exceptional products come from exceptional choices. So
well said.
That's what we're doing. All right. Number seven, our final hack is schedule a day to order in or go out. And I think this is super important for our mental aspect of our prep life, mm-hmm. our social aspect. I've been very intentional about doing this, whether it's going out to eat with my family, my husband, or my girlfriends. I try to schedule my high day on my carb cycle, my high carb day. You know, I try to schedule a night out at a restaurant that I'd like to eat at, and it's really easy to fit in that meal, and it's always something I enjoy. And I just think, you know, working those in, you know, and kind of I look ahead of time, you know, to just make sure that it's going to work. So I'll calculate it ahead of time looking at the menu, but it makes me feel good to just be, you know, have that kind of like ability to go out and enjoy yourself. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think it's an important aspect. You know, food is a time to fellowship with other people. And so I think you can do that while still aiming for your goals. And I think there's always a time and a place too. I think sometimes when it gets down to the nitty gritty, you can still fellowship with people, but it's a matter of, you know, maybe having a home cooked meal. But for the most part, I think it's a good thing to get familiar with eating out and being able to do that, living this lifestyle, because it's long term. And I think that it's a healthy activity as well too.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just actually talking with one of the competitors that's getting ready for St. Louis, and she's like, oh, one of my friends is in town and they really want to go out for sushi. I'm like, it's perfect. I'm like, you're on a high carb day. You know, rice and fish is very healthy. Just make it fit into your macros. So it was very spontaneous, but it was doable. And she looks great, but yet she also probably felt great too, because she was able to spend time with friends and not have to say like, oh, well, I'm just going to sit here and not eat anything. So yeah, I think that's it.
I love that.
That's all we got.
Yeah.
So we are going to just share a couple of different things. First of all, we have a posing seminar coming up at Angel Competition Bikinis. They have a really nice studio there. We did our last posing seminar there. It's going to be on May 2nd. It's a Sunday, and it's going to be from 1 to 2. So that's going to be fantastic. We will have more information on how to sign up for the seminar if you're in person, or to log into the Zoom call. We had quite a few people watching and participating last time, so that was good. And I feel like there was something else that we will also have a booth at the St. Louis show, the Midwestern States Championships in St. Louis on May 8th. You'll have to come see Coach Elizabeth. She'll be manning that booth. We are giving away a lot of different Glam Girl apparel items, so be sure to sign up for the giveaways at the booth, and that will make you eligible to win some unicorn swag. But yeah, that's all I've got. Anything else before we sign off that we missed?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Well, with that, you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. All of you, we just want to say, I want to take the time to say it means so much that you've reached out and said that you appreciate the podcast. It really keeps us going. I know at least it fires me up quite a bit to hear that it's making an impact. And we appreciate all of your suggestions and questions. We will be having probably a Q&A coming up pretty soon because I've gotten a couple DMs. But if you would like to send us more questions that you have in regards to living the prep life, we would love to answer those. So please feel free to send those our way. And then if you feel so motivated, it would really help us out if you were able to subscribe, review, or rate the podcast. It just helps other people that are interested in similar topics find us. So with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.